Call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Today is February the 24th. We're in the State Capitol Senate Finance Room. Present today, Chairman Stedman Olson, Senator Keel, Senator Merrick, Senator Kaufman, Senator Cronk, myself, Senator Hoffman. We have a full contingent of finance members. We have three items on today's agenda. First being HB 194, a bill that would approve the Marathon Petro Royalty oil sale. We heard this last year, but this is the House version. The second item is Senate Bill 167, criminal convicts overtures receive past PFDs. And the last item is Senate Bill 170, gaming electronic pull tabs. House Bill 194, approval of the Marathon Petro Royalty oil sale. This is the first hearing on the House version of the bill. Senator Stedman, a motion to adopt the CS.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that the Finance Committee adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 194 Finance 34GH1086/I before the committee as our working document.
And I will object and ask Liz Harpaugh's staff to Senator Olson to the Finance Committee table to explain the CS to the committee. Ms. Harpold.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, Liz Harpold, staff to Senator Olson and the Senate Finance Committee. As Chair Hoffman noted, this is the companion bill to a Senate bill that we heard last spring. In the time since we heard this bill, the department has come up with a new letter of agreement, and what the CS does is it updates the date of that letter, and in just a moment we'll be hearing a bit more from the department on what the changes are in that letter.
Thank you. Other questions of Ms. Harpole? I remove my objection to adopting the CS. Is there further objections to adopting the CS? Seeing none, the CS is adopted. I invite the Commissioner Designee from the Department of Natural Resources, John Crowther, to the table with any additional staff that he may want to assist him as lifelines. Ms. Crowther, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your explanation of the CS.
Thank you very much, Chair Hoffman. For the record, John Crowther, Commissioner Designee of the Department of Natural Resources. We'll have a short presentation to go through, but in quick summary, the committee substitute just adopted. Appreciate the committee's review of that. It updates the contract that's being considered for approval to a renegotiated contract of a little bit shorter term and a more standard pricing differential, essentially a back-to-basics contract that is very similar to the contract that's in place today that's expiring this year. And so we were seeking a review and approval of this contract so we can ensure that our in-state refinery in Marathon continues to have a royalty in kind oil supply. So we'll go through a very short presentation quickly for the committee that explains a little bit about the contract and the changes, and of course open for any questions yourselves have. Thank you, sir. We'll begin our presentation.
For the record, my name is Weston Nash. I'm with the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Oil and Gas. I'm a commercial analyst. And I'll be giving the presentation. I will pause at the end of each slide for questions. Otherwise, I will just proceed forward. So I will very, very briefly go over the basis of royalty in kind and royalty just as an ultimate refresher. In general, the state has two options to take its value of royalty. The royalty is either in value, which is the producing companies just pay us in cash, or in kind, whereas the state sells and markets that oil on our own. When we do decide to sell oil on our own, there is a specific process we go through that does require DNR to publish a best interest finding, which we have done, preliminary opening for public comments, and then also, again, a final, which we have also done. We then must also take that proposal to the Royalty Board of Alaska to get their input and opinions and approval. They then publish a report and findings to this to the legislature, which is the updated report was mentioned in the CS. And then we come and the final approval is from the legislature before we can then execute the new contract. So I will say, since we were back, we were here in March, we did have our last contract when we were here last was set to expire July 31st, 2025. We do have the option, the authority to enter into a one-year contract or contracts of 1 year or less, which we have done to extend our ability to sell oil to Marathon. We extended just the existing contract from last year and carried that forward one extra year. That is how we are still here, and we have been selling oil to Marathon for their refinery. That is, we do not have that option anymore. We cannot do back-to-back one-year contracts. So we are here before this committee and the legislature seeking approval for the contract. Very brief process overview. This is the same process, and I just want to kind of step through the process as we did. So item two, we did republish a solicitation of interest requesting anyone else who wanted oil. We did that in July of 2025 after the end of last session. In December, in October, step four, we decided there wasn't enough interest to form a competitive bid, so we did a non-competitive form, which got us into the Royalty Board, which we met with the Royalty Board with steps five and six in November and December. They were gracious enough to work around their holidays and all the schedules. So we finalized meeting with the Royalty Board middle of December, the 17th. And we were able to publish the final best interest finding there, step nine, on December 19th, 2025, which then brings us to step 10. Here we are with the committee substitute introduced just this morning. And I guess I just will add that steps 11, pending a legislative and executive approval, then we would execute the contract. And I do have a bit more of a slide on the timing on that here in a bit. Again, just a visualization, this is the same, but it has been updated since this spring. It's just showing we have been doing this royalty and kind sales for nearly 50 years. We and close to a billion barrels. Currently, we do each contract, and we do have two contracts in place, sell about 75 million barrels, 7.5, excuse me, million barrels of oil per year. This is just a review of the contracts over the last, 10 years, just showing the various terms and, you know, the volumes and terms. The two to note, I guess, are the bottom two, the PetroStar 2022 and then Marathon 2026. That is the current proposed contract. And, yeah, I'll give you more detail on that, the Marathon contract, in the very next slide. But just to show that we have taken it back to the same process or the same parameters as all the other years. It is a fixed term, shorter length. This is a total of 3 years. We set it to initial term of 1.5 years, 17 months, with an additional two 1 year extensions, optional extensions, and then the volume still well within our range, the 10,000 to 5,000 barrels a day. All right, this is the meat of the difference. What is the difference? In In the previous contract, we had submitted proposed a 3-year primary term with 7 1-year extensions. But with that, we referenced a floating differential, location differential price for the initial price of oil. And that location differential, what I'll say is it's the volume average weight or volume-weighted average of the difference between sale of Alaska oil at the Valley's terminal and the west coast of Alaska. So really, it's an analog to show what is the cost of oil in transporting oil in and around to and from Alaska, not from the west coast. And it is a different value than the west coast shipping value. So there were a lot of questions around those two terms. So with this new contract, we stepped back and we made this a fixed term contract of 17 months. And why it is an odd number, 17 months, the current contract expires July 31st, 2025. We're trying to align it with our other contract that we have, the RIK contract with PetroStar, that does also expire at the end of the year. And that also alleviates any sort of in-session pressure, which I have a bit more on that also coming up, that might arise just from the timing, just based on a timing thing. So that's the 17-month term. And that actually is also the exact date that the PetroStar contract expires. So in an ideal world, maybe we can align the two parties and have the contracts presented to the legislature at the same time. And then the 2 1-year extensions are just kind of in case we need further, or we're all happy with the contract as is and we don't need to. So we did go back to a fixed RIK differential, and this is, so again, we take that published location differential. It's a 12-year average, 12-month, excuse me, average. And it is published every month by DOR, and we take that and we subtract a variable amount. I believe we stuck with the 24 cents. It might be 26 cents from that's what the premium that the state gets over that fixed location differential. We're able to get that differential because the state volumes are allow the Marathon refinery to be a bit more flexible. We have that flexibility of providing on-demand volumes, higher or lower, to meet the refinery's needs. Whereas the production company is more, you know, they're more interested in filling their tankers, so they want a long-term, very, very fixed number. So it's our flexibility that gives us that a premium in that location differential. So looking at this location differential, these are the variances of the premium that the state has gotten over the location differential. You'll see there are a few times where it does go negative, but again, that is because we don't control the number. It's just a published price, and we have a variable off of it. But by and large, it is we are typically well over the differential. And over the past 20 years, we have made an additional, beyond royalty and value amounts, nearly $200 million.
Senator Keel.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Nash, maybe for the folks listening at home, why would a refinery agree to pay us more than we were otherwise going to get for the oil? What's their interest?
Senator Carroll, through the chair, that again, it's that flexibility. Sometimes, you know, they don't need that constant, steady state of, using an example number of 50,000 barrels every month. You know, they in the summer, especially, you know, equipment needs maintenance, so they need to turn down the dial in the summer. Whereas the state can say, okay, and our contracts do allow a certain number of months of zero nomination periods, or a period of zero nominations. So it is that flexibility. And then there might be just an all of a sudden there's an extra demand in volumes in, say, Jet A, which is a product refined at the Marathon plant, that it would allow them, with 100 days' notice, to increase production as they could, whereas typical oil production or oil contracts, again, from the larger producers, would be a more, no, you will take, it's kind of a take or pay. If you do not take this oil, you still pay for it. That is a more typical contract, again, from a higher level or a bigger producer, because they need more constant supply, so they know exactly how long it takes to fill a tanker, so that they are not sitting on their tankers in the harbors more often. Again, it's flexibility that we can provide.
Senator Stedman.
On that subject, Mr. Chairman, do they not kind of skim off the higher value, higher grade product out of the line and put back in some of the residual? Or
Mr. Nash.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, this is John Crowther, Commissioner Designee, for the record. So the PetroStar refinery in the interior does remove and then return product to the line, and that is implicates the quality bank and the issues of crude quality that I think you're referencing. That same dynamic is also present in Valdez relative to what's refined at that PetroStar refinery and then what's shipped out. The Marathon refinery in the Kenai Peninsula receives some of these shipments from Valdez. The product that ultimately isn't refined and consumed in Alaska can be transported out, but is not subject to the quality bank regulation through FERC.
Thank you. Mr. Nash, please continue.
Yeah, for the record, Mr. Nash. So this is our current timeline. So our current contract with Marathon expires July 31st, 2026. So that means beginning August 1st, we cannot nominate, we cannot request oil be delivered to Marathon on the state's behalf. In order to do that, so there is a 90-day period with that we have in agreements with the oil producers, and then there's an additional 10 days, which does make it a 100-day notice period. That is an administrative additional 10 days for the actual nomination process. So there is a 100 days moving back from August 1st that we need the contract needs to be approved by the legislature and the executive before we can execute the contract and then be able to nominate on August 1st. I did the math for the record. That is April 22nd, 2026. And as I said before, we do currently have a one-year contract. And that ability is a one-year or less contract, but we do not have that ability, the authority to enter into two of those one-year or less contracts back in a row. We can't. So without approval of this contract, we cannot sell to Marathon after July 31st.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't ever recall us modifying these contracts as they've come before us over the years. At least I don't recall us ever doing that. And then is it safe to assume then that the administration has already approved this contract to bring before the legislature for blessing? Or do we risk a veto?
Commissioner.
Because they haven't looked at it.
Senator Stedman, through the chair, John Crowther, Commissioner Designee, for the record, I can never speak to the governor's powers and how he may execute them, but I will say the department on behalf of the state executive branch with the governor's awareness has renegotiated this contract to be a simple back to basics. We're now seeking legislative approval of it as a governor's bill.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Do you have further follow-up? Mr. Nash.
For the record, Weston Nash. And again, so this is the basic benefit, or not basic. These are the this is the benefit of our RIKI contracts. Again, this is no change. This is just a reminder of the benefits of the ability to sell oil within the state of Alaska to the refineries and to the Marathon refinery in particular. We do receive an incremental additional revenue of $4 to $6 million over royalty and value. And then the Marathon refinery does, or Marathon itself does provide 220 full-time positions in Alaska. Oh, and Nikiski. And then over 100 in, its other facilities, Anchorage and North Pole. They do to produce locally used products of, like I said, gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. They do have a pipeline straight to Ted Stevens, and then they also distribute gasoline via trucks throughout the state. And they refine about 55,000 barrels of product per day.
That's throughout the state along the...
Throughout the state, yeah.
They do along the highway.
Correct. They do distribute along the highway. Yeah.
No road to Bethel yet.
Not yet, no, Chairman.
Please proceed.
And that is the last slide, unless there are other questions.
No other questions. Does that conclude your presentation, Dennis? I mean, Derek, do you have any input?
I'm fine.
Mistaken you for another Nottingham.
Nothing further, sir.
Okay, that... with that, we will open up the public hearing. Is there anyone in the room that wants to testify on this bill? Is there anyone online? Let's see here. I don't see.
Yeah.
Pardon? Brief eddies. Order. We do have one person online, Casey Sullivan. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Good morning. My name is Casey Sullivan. I'm the Government and Public Affairs Manager for Marathon Petroleum and Kenai Refinery. Thank you for taking the opportunity to see this CS today, and I'm pleased to share our support for this CS for House Bill 194. I think the department did a really good job of outlining the benefits of this contract for Alaska and Kenai Refinery. The legislation before you is the result of really constructive dialogue and productive negotiations that we've had between the Department of Natural Resources and Marathon. We appreciate the feedback from this committee last year, and we're confident that this new contract as presented will provide a positive shared value to Alaskans. And just to reiterate some points that were made, but really the availability, this flexibility, and stability that this contract offers for the refinery is truly a win-win for the state, but it also allows us to optimize our ongoing operations at that Kenai refinery. So appreciate Mr. Nash's description there. With that, I respectfully ask for your support for the CS for House Bill 194. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. I don't see anyone else online. We will close the public hearing at this time. Senator Keel, a review of the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have one fiscal note before me from the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Oil and Gas. It shows no added costs and an indeterminate change in revenues for fiscal years 28 through 30. I note that in the discussion on the back, they talk about the revenue to the state being between $12 and $18 million for those 3 years.
Thank you, Senator Keel, for that explanation. Is there any additional comments from finance members? Seeing none, we'll set this bill aside for consideration at a future date. That brings us to item two, which is Senate Bill 167, Criminal Convictions and Overtures. This is the first hearing on the bill. We invite Senator Kawasaki and any of his assistants to the table to introduce the bill. Senator Kawasaki, please introduce yourself and proceed with your presentation.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Finance Committee. Pleased to be in front of you today to present Senate Bill 167. The State of Alaska Department, the Department of Law Criminal Division's mission is to, quote, assure safe and healthy communities by prosecuting and convicting criminal behaviors throughout Alaska. Likewise, the state has a responsibility to ensure that those convicted of crimes are prosecuted fairly and justly. If the state finds an offender was wrongfully convicted, the state should do the right thing by those who have had their convictions overturned. Alaska is currently just one of a dozen states that do not provide compensation for those who are wrongfully convicted. Many states provide monetary compensation as well as things like college tuition or job training for the exonerees upon release. Let's see. Providing the PFD to Alaskans who've lost their privilege because of a wrongful conviction is one of the few things that the state of Alaska can do to help them reestablish themselves into normal life, and by providing means to find housing, food, or education. A similar bill like this, while we're not able to return the experiences and opportunities missed from a person who might have been wrongfully incarcerated, we can at least be able to reimburse them for the money that rightfully belongs to them through the permanent fund dividend. In 2017, a bill passed the House, similarly overwhelmingly with bipartisan support. I ask the support of this bill, which will help victims of injustice with their transition back into society as the state looks to ensure justice and fairness to all Alaskans. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Kawasaki. Do members of the Finance Committee have questions of the prime sponsor? Seeing none, we have invited testimony from Jory Knott, the Executive Director of the Alaska Innocence Project online. Please identify yourself and proceed with your invited testimony. Jory? Are you on mute?
Hello, Chairman and Senate Finance Committee. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for your time. My name is Jory Knott, and I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska Innocence Project. And I respectfully ask that you pass Senate Bill 167, 8 years coming, for compensation for the wrongfully convicted. We feel it's simply the right thing to do. Please note this is not a compensation statute, and this is not a services statute, like Senator Kawasaki noted. But I did want to note that Alaska is being left behind, and that since we do not have a statute that compensates wrongfully convicted or services, when the bill was first introduced in 2017, 18 states lacked compensation. Now that number is only 12. Even last year, states changed their laws to correct for this mistake. I wanted to note that even our rightfully convicted receive basic services, integration services. Some Texas gives robust services, including education, back child support, housing assistance, college tuition, et cetera. We are not asking for that here. We are asking to give back what it means to be Alaskan and to give them back their means to at least get their families together to start building a future after years wrongfully incarcerated. We do have some notes on the fiscal impact here. And just from us, the Fairbanks Four, and one other individual that we know from our research, and that's through National Database and Center, that would be impacted by this bill. There may be more, but we know that even though this note has been now set to indeterminate, even though it was set to zero, in 2017 that would have no physical note. Now has been noted as indeterminate. We know that indeterminate also, in this case, would mean extremely nominal, in the order of an increase at best of around 0.3% to the fund. There is a fund. There's a fund that rotates in the PFD within it that adds $400,000 a year. It corrects for itself, and it remains a balance around $2 million. And this is nothing. This is around $55,000 one time, and I just ask that even though that this is here and respectfully has your time and finance, I'm remiss that I really do not think this fiscal note is of any weight here. And you know, I really ask that we give back what it means to be an Alaskan for when these people get out. And, you know, this is not a compensation bill. So we are already behind even on passing this bill. The momentum is going the other way. Thank you very much for your time. Feel free to ask any questions.
There are no questions at this time. Thank you for your testimony. We will open the public hearing. We have one individual in Palmer, Sari Murtada. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Good morning, thank you. My name is Sarah Murtada, I live in Palmer. I am calling in to support this bill. I am very proud to be an Alaskan. I'm proud of the PFD fund our state set up in the 70s, set up for all of us, set up for our children, set up for our grandchildren. And I'm asking you all to ensure that every Alaskan gets this opportunity. This bill is well thought out. This bill, I support it because it comes out of the errors and mistake portion of the PFD, so I know it's not going to affect my individual PFD. But I want those folks who are falsely convicted and spend time in prison to be entitled to the same thing every single one of us, whether every single one of us is entitled to. When the system fails and someone's wrongly imprisoned, the state has a duty to return their personal property. And like it's been said before, this is about restoration, not compensation. So I ask every one of you to support this bill as much as you possibly can. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see anyone else online. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we'll close a public hearing. And Senator Keel, review of the fiscal note.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have one fiscal note from the Department of Revenue's Permanent Fund Dividend Division. They show an indeterminate cost from the Permanent Fund Dividend Fund and note that they will need to make some regulation changes.
Questions on the fiscal note?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wonder if the sponsor has any kind of estimate of how many folks might potentially qualify for this. I know there was a mention of the Fairbanks Four in the packet materials, but any guidance you can provide the committee on how many folks might be able to qualify here?
Yes, for the record,
Senator Kawasaki.
For the record, Senator Scott Kawasaki, and I did want to defer to my staff member.
Matty Hall, staff to Senator Scott Kawasaki for the record. Through the chair to Senator Keels. according to our advocates and all public data, this based off of all data that we have, this would estimate to five people, the Fairbanks Four, as well as an individual named Lalo Segal. The estimated cost for covering these five people would be $55,000. This would not necessarily come straight from the state. This would be coming through a reserve that has already been designed in statute called the Prior Liabilities Dividend Reserve. And what this would do would add these five claimees onto a pool that already sustains hundreds of people per year. Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe a little more clarification on the fund source. We understand it's coming out of dividends that weren't paid, but there's a restorative justice account that gets dispersed out. And so can we get a little more clarification on that?
Mr. Hall.
Senator, this is Senator Scott Kawasaki for the record, and I'll try, although it might be also good to call somebody from revenue, in particular from the permit fund dividend division. So there is a reserve. The reserve is created in statute that holds basically a small amount for dividends that may be paid out at a future time. So it's called a reserve for liabilities fund. It's somewhere between $2 million and originally somewhere around $600,000. And it exists for the purposes of things like this or for PFDs that may be paid late, those types of issues. Again, since this fund would be used basically to pay a past criminal conviction PFD, and we've analyzed that there's really not very many people to that, the fund would be able to pay that out and then be replenished every year after through current statute and through the budget process.
Senator Stedman.
Yeah, that's good enough for today. We can have them get back to us, I think, Mr. Chairman, just so we have a clarification on the moving parts of the permanent fund.
Thank you. Are there further questions to the prime sponsor? Seeing none, we'll set this bill aside for further consideration by the Finance Committee. That brings us to the third item on today's calendar, Senate Bill 170, gaming electronic pull tabs. This is the first hearing on this bill. I invite Senator Bjorkman to the table, along with any assistance he may want to bring with him. Senator, please introduce yourself for the record and explain the bill to the committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairs Olson and Stedman, and the rest of the members of the esteemed Senate Finance Committee. For the record, my name is Jesse Bjorkman, and I represent the northern and central portions of the Kenai Peninsula. The bill before you seeks to modernize charitable gaming in Alaska. The problem that exists is, for years now, nonprofit organizations and charities have been raising money through paper pull tabs, or RIPPIs. However, the cost of those paper tickets has gone up substantially, along with the cost of labor, and now even the cost of silver, making coin boards, one game that nonprofits and charities benefit from and raise money from, so expensive that they are uneconomic to be used to raise money for those nonprofits and charities. Modernizing paper pull tabs into an optional electronic pull tab would solve this problem of rising costs of paper tickets and allow charities and nonprofits like the Alaska Baseball League, youth sports, including Little League and hockey, comp soccer, comp volleyball, senior citizen centers, veteran service organizations, to continue to be able to raise money in an effective way through charitable gaming by selling tickets now in electronic form at $1 a piece under almost exactly the same regulations that exist currently for the paper system. Six other states have taken on similar legislation like this. The current bill before you is based largely on Minnesota's system, where they have seen a very successful implementation of electronic pull tabs played on tablets only in a way that is still social and is still an effective way for charities and nonprofits to raise money to run their organizations. This then allows them to not ask local governments and state government for money, but simply keep raising money how they have under the old paper pull tab regime. We have a number of online nonprofits and charities prepared to provide invited testimony, as well as one manufacturer of these electronic pull tabs for you, as well as my staff here, Mr. Conrad Jackson, to go over a sectional analysis of the bill.
Questions of the prime sponsor? Seeing none, we will go to invited testimony. In person, Bill Brissol with Diamond Games. Please come to the table and present your invited testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Bill Breslow. I'm president of Diamond Game Enterprises, and I'm here to testify in support of this bill, Senate Bill 170. Diamond Game makes electronic gaming devices, primarily for the charity space lottery gaming industry across the U.S. and Canada. Our sister companies, such as American Games, International Game Co., they provide pull tabs, bingo paper, bingo daubers, et cetera, various charitable gaming products across the U.S. and Canada as well. They've been supplying Alaska with product for over 30 years. We've been in business for 32 years. And as Senator Bjorkman said, we're familiar with the program in Minnesota. So kind of my thought here was to give you some background on that state, our feelings about the bill, and, of course, be able to take any questions. So we make electronic pull tabs in tablet form, which is the product being contemplated here with SB 170 and is also the product that's in Minnesota. We also make electronic pull tabs in cabinet form, which is not the subject of this legislation. And in Minnesota, which is really very pretty similar to Alaska, it's a big charity gaming state. They sell a lot of pull tabs in support of their charities there. And they went through this process of modernizing pull tabs about 14 years ago. So it was a big pull tab state. They considered electronic pull tabs. They approved that. And in that time frame, standard pull tabs, the paper pull tabs, doubled in about a 12, 13-year period. And in conjunction with the electronic pull tabs, sales quadrupled. So it's really been a big success for the charities there. And again, this is in a tablet form there. We also supply them in Idaho, in conjunction with cabinets, incidentally. But this initiative here to modernize has been ongoing for several years. We think that Senator Bjorkman and senators in Labor and Commerce have done a really good job in terms of listening to Alaska charities, stakeholders in Alaska, listening to manufacturers like us, and what is the right product for Alaska, and how to raise additional funds for charity gaming. It's not a perfect bill.
Sorry.
There are a few things that we would like to see changed. I'm sure you're going to hear from a number of folks in the industry that would like to see various components of the bill modified. We encourage you to hear our comments, which I've written in supplied written testimony for a few things related to strengthening inducement language, some matters around exclusives on paper pull tabs, which I'd be happy to go into if you'd like, but it has been supplied in detail in writing. But to not let these varying opinions stymie the bill. We feel there's really a lot of good in this bill for charities here, for the stakeholders in Alaska, and we would love to see it advance.
Thank you, Mr. Brislow. The second individual that is listed on online for invited testimony comes from Kenai. Julie Otto, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your invited testimony.
Yes, thank you. My name is Julie Otto, and I am the Executive Director of the Nanook Senior Center. We are permitting and we own and operate EZ3 Pull Tabs, which is located in Kenai. I thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important issue. Nanook Senior is a nonprofit corporation, and as many of you are aware, being a nonprofit corporation often means you have a never-ending battle to find funding. We are an agency that is reliant on borough, state, federal grants to meet our financial obligations. And as we all know, the grant funding is never guaranteed. So as another factor, let's consider us being a nonprofit corporation who relies on grants, whose clientele are made up of one of our most vulnerable populations, senior citizens. Senior citizen population is one of the fastest growing segments of our state's population. seniors have worked their whole lives waiting for retirement, and unfortunately for some, retirement often comes with having to choose between food and medication, as there never seems to be enough money to cover both. And then there's the question for our seniors about how do I get to my appointment when I can't drive after dark, and I really need groceries, and I have to get to a doctor appointment. The question gets asked, how can I stay out of a nursing home and continue to live in the home and community of my choice? Well, that's where the Senior Center steps in. Our mission reads, we are dedicated to making life easier, more interesting, and providing assistance to others in need among our members as well as the surrounding communities in ways which lift the spirits and give a feeling of love to each other. And our core purpose is improving the lives of our seniors in our community. So as part of our mission, we provide nutritious meals for seniors. We give rides to doctor appointments. We take them to, we're located in the Meal 6. We take them to Spadina. We take them to Homer. We take them to their appointments to hopefully help them be able to stay in the community. And so all of this costs money. And we happily serve over 15,000 meals a year, with almost half of them being delivered. On average, one meal costs about $23 when you factor in salaries, utilities, gas, food costs, all that kind of stuff. Our suggested donation price for the seniors is $8 a meal, which for many seniors, even that cost is unattainable. So how do we offset those costs? As we previously mentioned, we get grant money through the borough, the state, and federal sources, but that's not going to make up the whole difference. So how does that difference get made up? Well, for us, it's gaming. We opened our Pultec store up in Kenai in January of 2020, and promptly shut it down in April due to COVID. We opened 6 weeks later, and since that time, our gaming monies have allowed us to be able to continue operating and providing services to our senior population. Without the gaming monies, we would be limited in what we could do, which would in turn hurt our senior population. Keeping gaming monies is critical to the nonprofits in our state, and I support ETAP as a way to continue keeping those services flowing. Paper pulls have, as you've mentioned, they've been very successful, but the costs keep going up. You know, it's like it's hard to keep up with everything with technology and all that kind of stuff. So as a result of having to pay more for paper and the higher prices, that increases all of our costs. And then, so I support the SB 170, and we're hopeful that this will go through to help us alleviate some of our reliance on the local, state, and federal monies and continue to provide the services that are so needed by our seniors. I'm happy to take any questions if anybody has any.
Seeing none, Ms. Otto, thank you for your testimony. We will go to the third individual from Soldotna, Heidi Sorrell. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your invited testimony.
For the record, my name is Heidi Sorrell. I'm the executive director of the Soldotna Chamber of Commerce, and we are also a permittee, and we own and operate River City Pull Tabs in Soldotna. I truly appreciate the opportunity to testify in strong support today of SB 170. I'd like to begin by sincerely thanking Senator Bjorkman for sponsoring this bill. I'm very glad to see legislation that recognizes both the importance of charitable gaming in Alaska and also the need to modernize it responsibly. I feel like this bill strikes a thoughtful balance, and I'm grateful for all of the work that's gone into it. So for us here at the Soldotna Chamber, charitable gaming, it isn't some kind of abstract policy issue, right? It very directly affects us, as well as so many of our Soldotna Chamber members, and also our nonprofit partners across the entire Kenai Peninsula, and really across the entire state of Alaska. So many of our organizations rely on pull tabs to fund, you know, youth sports, senior services, veterans programs, scholarships, and a mountain of community initiatives that would not exist, or if they did exist, it would have a fraction of the impact without this revenue. Many of our chamber members and community partners rely on gaming to keep all kinds of our essential programs running. That includes organizations like the Boys and Girls Club, where they're providing safe after-school spaces and mentoring children. You have your senior centers, such as the Soldotna Senior Center, the Kenai Senior Center. They're offering meals and connection for elders. And then you have your veterans organizations, like the American Legion Department of Alaska and your Veterans of Foreign Wars Department of Alaska, that support veterans and their families. So you have these trusted boots-on-the-ground organizations doing quiet, vital, and impactful work every single day. And at the Soldotna Chamber alone, we've reinvested tens of thousands of dollars back into the community through scholarships, business grants, and numerous consistent community projects over the years. So we're talking money that goes directly to students working to build better futures for themselves and for our region. Our scholarships have helped people who are working to help their family pay bills while also pursuing their degrees. We've supported students who leave to gain educational skills, and then they return home and they serve our community as teachers, healthcare workers, business owners, and all type of community leaders. So the cycle of investment and return strengthens Soldotna, and it strengthens all of Alaska. Just recently, at the end of 2025, through our Spark Soldotna Business Grant Program, we awarded $4,000 to Corey's Loaded Baked Potatoes, and this is a young entrepreneur who started a business to help support his family. It's not a large corporation. I mean, this is a young teen, and he was a hardworking young person with an idea, a work ethic, and just a desire to contribute to the local economy. But it's charitable revenue that made this possible. So now we're in a place where we're facing a reality where the economics of paper pull tabs have changed over the years, which is to be expected, but now we need to adjust. So the cost of producing paper tickets has increased dramatically. Labor costs have risen, utilities have risen, operational expenses have risen, and the margin that has made paper pull tabs a sustainable revenue source for nonprofits, we're seeing that it's steadily shrinking. So as those margins begin to shrink, I mean, we're feeling it. So our programs will have to scale back. Our scholarships will get smaller. Fundraising becomes more frequent for us. Volunteers get burnt out. And, you know, people who rely on our services, as well as several other services funded through charitable gaming, ultimately those are the ones that are going to feel the larger impact of this. So I'm incredibly thrilled to see SB 170 addressing this reality in a very responsible and practical way. The bill doesn't abandon oversight. It does not remove limits. It doesn't turn charitable gaming into a casino-style expansion or anything like that. What it does is it modernizes an existing charitable model so that we can remain viable in today's changing economy. Providing the option for electronic pull tabs on tablets creates the longevity we really need for charitable gaming. And it gives us here at the Soldotna Chamber, as well as all of these other nonprofits I've been mentioning, just another tool to generate the same type of charitable revenue with lower overhead and just a greater efficiency. So that means we're able to put more dollars flowing right back into communities and fewer dollars are lost to rising operational costs. I also appreciate that SB 170 places important guardrails around this modernization. By separating roles, restricting certain, ownership relationships, and limiting preferential arrangements. So the bill truly seems to promote a more level playing field, and that matters for us. You know, a fair and competitive system helps prevent undue influence, and it keeps costs from being driven up by limited access or exclusive relationships, and it really protects the integrity of charitable gaming. At the end of the day, the bill helps all of us in the nonprofit world. It promotes equity, helps fairness, keeps pull tabs costs more manageable, keeps the focus where it belongs, and it's generating revenue for incredible charitable causes while still giving people a fun way to give back to their communities. So SB 170, it's really about sustainability, ensuring that charitable gaming can continue to support youth, seniors, veterans, families, and community organizations for years to come. You know, without us having to go to the state and ask for additional general fund dollars. So I'm very proud to support this bill, and I'm grateful that it's been sponsored, and I respectfully ask the committee to move SB 170 forward. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Ms. Sorrell. We'll go north to Fairbanks, where we will hear from Samantha. Wait a minute.
Krista.
Please proceed with your invited testimony.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. I'm so grateful for the testimony that we've already heard about pull tabs. I'm going to talk about a little different program that is within the, all of the things that you have for local charity funding mechanisms. Thank you, Senators, for your attention to this important bill for Alaska's nonprofits. It is very important. The most important thing that you're going to hear from me today is a request that you move this important and very valuable bill out of your committee. It's very important to the sustainability of Alaska's nonprofits, and we wish to the Fairbanks Community Food Bank wishes to support this bill. You will remember when the Doge effect changed federal funding for many of Alaska's nonprofits in 2006. And I'm here to tell you that it did not affect this local Fairbanks Community Food Bank because we rely on community funding. Only 5% of our annual budget comes through government funding, and we rely on the resources of our local community and an opportunity such as Lotto Alaska to keep the doors open here. This is the beginning of our third year of receiving funding from Lotto Alaska, and we sought funding from them last year because our mission statement is to collect local surplus food and give it free to local Alaskans. We've been doing this work since 1982, 43 years, and we have done it with the communities we serve supporting our programs. The second part of our mission statement has always been to keep food waste out of the local landfill. And this past year, we were able to present a project to Lotto Alaska, which made it possible to purchase a biodigester. Yesterday's food waste can now be turned into compost material, which we can then provide to our local growers who grow food for this food bank. Since we receive free food and give it away free, we would not be able to purchase this $125,000 biodigester plus the supplies needed to operate it. We're very thankful for the nonprofit investments we're able to, access through this program. This year, our submitted project is that we can provide a space for our food as medicine program. Patients who are referred into our local program are able to access 6 pounds of fresh produce 5 days a week, and of course, that's free. I'm sure you have other questions about our various food bank programs, although some of you have been here and know of them. But I'm here to answer your questions, but to give you a little history here. We collect 5 to 10 tons of, local food 6 days a week. 10% of what we collect is food waste from local stores. We provide at least 250 food box orders each day, and 2/3 of our workers are local volunteers. In our food as medicine program, we had to cap it at 1,000 patients that we are enrolled in the program, and we can serve 150 patients a day. So our work is significant, and we would not be able to do that without having a lot of Alaska funding. So thank you so much for all of the things that you're listening to today, and we are hopeful that you will support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christine, for your invited testimony. That concludes the individuals that were invited to testify. We will move on to public testimony and go to back to Soldotna and hear from Cindy Glassmaker for 2 minutes of testimony. Please proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony, Ms. Glassmaker.
Good morning. Thank you, committee chairman and committee. My name is Cindy Glassmaker from Soldotna. As a parent involved in charitable gaming, which helps supplement the funding of various programs, I would like the opportunity to express my support for Senate Bill 170. Senate Bill 170 helps ensure that charitable gaming remains a viable and responsible funding source while preserving the social nature of activities like pool tabs. Importantly, it also helps reduce pressure on limited state funding by allowing voluntary charitable contributions to continue supporting community needs. For many years, youth sports teams and school programs have increasingly relied on local businesses for funding as school district support for extracurricular activities has declined. These activities are not extras. They play a critical role in supporting children's mental well-being, teaching teamwork, and providing healthy, structured outlets for our youth. However, the same small group of businesses is often asked repeatedly to fill these funding gaps. Supporting ETABs is not only a practical response to the rising cost of printing paper products, but it also creates a more inclusive funding model. By allowing proceeds to be shared among multiple nonprofits at a single location, more organizations, including those focused on youth, can benefit. Charitable gaming has provided more consistent and predictable funding, easing financial uncertainty for programs and directly impact kids and families. Senate Bill 170 would also make it easier for booster clubs across the state to participate in charitable gaming. I have been involved in a booster club for the past 2 years and am deeply grateful for the support Lotto Alaska has provided, particularly in helping offset increasingly high travel costs. At our high school, many booster clubs now rely on charitable gaming to replace funding that was once provided by the school district, ensuring students can continue to access the full benefits of school activities without added financial stress on families. Thank you for your time and consideration to support this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Glassmaker. Peter Dixon, please identify yourself and proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
Hi, my name is Peter Dickinson, and I'm obviously testifying on behalf of Senate Bill 170. I'm calling on behalf of All American Training Center Booster Club, Soldotna High School Wrestling Booster Club, Skyview Middle School Booster Club, and Soldotna Whaler Booster Club. I built a 15,000 square foot facility in Soldotna, support all sports on the Kenai Peninsula and around the state by providing training camps and a place for kids to go. We started AATC in 2020 and have since sent over 15 kids to universities on wrestling scholarships. We do participate in gaming as a permittee. However, it is difficult to find locations for pull tabs, as many businesses would be willing to do e-tabs instead of paper tabs. Our goal is to continue growing and supporting the sporting community, and with the dwindling funding for school sports, electronic tabs would help close that gap. E-tabs have proven to increase revenue to nonprofits and charities of up to 75% in various states. I have past college teammates that head up high school, middle school, and club sports in other states that are fully funded by ETABs. I respectfully ask for your support for Senate Bill 170, and thank you, and Mrs. B. Dickinson.
Thank you for that testimony. We will now move on to Wasilla, where we will hear from Jonathan Hackett. Please identify yourself and proceed with 2 minutes of testimony.
Yes, hello, members of the Senate Finance Committee, and thank you for allowing me to provide my thoughts and requests during this process. I'm Jonathan Hackett, speaking on behalf of the Veterans of Foreign Wars. Our VFW posts are more than just meeting halls and canteens. They are places where veterans connect, support one another, and organize service projects to strengthen our entire community. Many of our posts donate the use of their facilities in the local community for celebrations of life, fundraising efforts, shelters, and operational centers during emergencies. We support scouting programs, youth sports in high school and community competition teams, educational trips, the BFW scholarship program, both the Patriots Pen and Voice Democracy, and the families in need. Many veterans in our communities are supported with snow removal, firewood, assistance in moving, rent, utilities, car repairs, job hunting, and rides to appointments. Our work reaches far beyond the walls of our post and membership. These are tangible efforts that improve lives of Alaskans every day. A critical part of how we sustain that work is through charitable gaming. However, our laws are not keeping pace with technology. Currently, 13 states allow the use of modern electronic pull tabs for veteran organization fundraising. We have seen firsthand how this has pumped life into their veteran service organizations and the communities where they operate. The funds generated through charitable gaming are essential to keeping our posts open. They help cover basic operating costs like insurance, utilities, and facility maintenance. Without those revenue, many posts would have to shut their doors, thus hurting their communities. Electronic pull tabs will ensure generational sustainability by attracting new members, increasing engagement with our existing members, and a sustainable revenue. Authorization of electronic pull tabs is not an extension of gaming. It is a modernization of an existing form of gaming housed within the same regulatory framework and same restrictions. We support the same low stakes and same low prizes existing today with paper pull tabs. Two notes here. Electronic assists in going green by saving paper, and bingo is already electronic by utilization of the current tablets. We ask that you assist us in modernization of charitable gaming by supporting electronic pull tab legislation so we can continue our mission and our commitment to community service moving forward. Thank you for listening, and I yield any time remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Hackett, we'll go back to Anchorage and hear from Jerry Lewis. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Thank you for your time. I'm Jerry Lewis. I'm an operator in Anchorage. I run Northern Lights Bingo and Rippy Worlds. I contract with over 50 charities across the state. Been in gaming all of my professional career in Alaska, Colorado, and Nevada. And I've seen several versions of gaming, and Alaska's charitable gaming model is the best I've ever seen. I want everyone to be assured that if this bill passes, it will completely change the charitable gaming in Alaska. Alaska is the only place in the world that has pull-tab stores being run by nonprofits and operators alike. Also, Alaska is the only place that has operators contracting with nonprofits to run bingo halls and pull-tab stores. Most other states have volunteered running bingo sporadically. I'm sure you've heard that SB 170 mimics the Minnesota model and how well Minnesota is doing with DTABs, but let me assure you this does not mimic the Minnesota model. Because other states run charitable gaming, no other state runs charitable gaming the way Alaska does. The bill was written heavily to favor locations selling alcohol because that's how other states sell pull tabs. In Alaska in 2024, locations selling alcohol only generated 10% of the net proceeds paid to charities, while operators generated over 50% of the net proceeds paid to charities. If we're going to reference the Minnesota model, let's be clear about what it actually is. Minnesota model limits the number of tablets that an establishment can serve that serves alcohol to 6. SB 170 would limit that to 10. Minnesota also limits the amount a location serving alcohol can retain to be no more than 15% of the profit of the game. SB 170 proposes a limit of 25%. It's a huge difference. We need to be very careful here because in several situations in Alaska, operators and permittees rent space in a bar to conduct gaming, so any restriction here should clearly be limited to the establishment itself. You guys have heard several comments about the cost of games and the cost of paper. Minnesota would limit what a manufacturer can charge for a game to 25%, but SB 170 would limit that to 35%, and that does not include the tax. Currently, we only pay 20% for paper games. That's significantly less than the 35% that SB 170 would propose. You know, I've heard that the bill has passed. It's because of the cost of paper, and the cost of paper is out of control, but, you know, my situation, everybody knows that the demand for paper is down and paper prices are steady. The bill, as it's currently written, would certainly lead to the end of pull-tab stores and many bingo halls, thereby reducing the opportunities for charities to be funded and devastating charitable gaming as we know it. The bill would be easier for me to support if it did actually mimic the Minnesota model, but it doesn't. And so for that reason, I guess I am testifying today in opposition of the bill. Thank you for your time. We'll take any questions if anybody has them.
Thank you. We'll stay in Anchorage and hear from Sandy Powers. Please proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Hi, my name is Sandy Powers, and I operate Big Valley Bingo in Wasilla, and I'm also representing my husband, John Powers, who owns Tudor Bingo Center in Anchorage. Together, we have about 75 charities and about 75 employees, and we raise over $3 million collectively for our charities. There are 16 operators in Alaska, and about half of those contribute more than 50% of all gaming dollars raised for Alaska charities. I do agree with Jerry Lewis's concerns about the cost. We believe there's many good things in this bill that level the playing field for all types of gaming, but we really need to address the cost of this, and I think they could be easily changed by the Finance Committee. The ideal payout in the bill states that it's not to exceed 90%, and I believe that needs to be reduced to 85%. I sent a page that shows the difference in the cost and how much less goes to the charities. I sent it in my email. 90% is closer to the slot machines operated by the native village of Aklutna Casino in Birchwood. I totally agree with Jerry Lewis that the price for electronic pull tabs should not should not be at 35%. It needs to be reduced to 25%. I also agree that any place that serves alcohol needs to be limited to 6. Otherwise, some of these large bars will turn into mini casinos with 40 or 50 tablets or more. And just a couple of background things. Why I do believe it is important to pass a good version of Senate Bill 170. All Anchorage and Valley establishments are being hurt by the Native Village of Aklutna casinos. Our headcounts are down. There's a lot of pressure. If we can get a good ETAF bill, it will give us a chance to compete with Aklutna. And we've also pretty much lost the ability to have coin boards in our paper pull tabs. With the skyrocketing price of silver, the coin boards are 3 to 4 times what they were a short time ago. So, again, I think a good version of the ETAF bill with the cost corrected, which is something easily the Finance Committee could do. I think if those things are done, I could support the passing of Senate Bill 170. Does anybody have any questions for me?
Seeing no questions, that concludes.
Okay, thank you, Senator.
Thank you. That concludes testimony online. Is there anyone in the room that would like to testify at this time? Please come forward, identify yourself for the record, and proceed with your 2 minutes of testimony.
Hello, my name is Doug McBride, and I own Alaska Indoor Sports Distributing. I'm proud to say my father used to be a legislator many years ago. Anyway, I'd like to talk about 4 specific provisions of SB 170. Those provisions, I think, get in the way and interfere with passing a bill. That's why I'm bringing them up. So the first provision is in Section 25, letter J, and this provision requires manufacturers to sell to all distributors. It's commonly referred to as a sell-all provision. I think it's a mistake to have this provision in this bill for these reasons. First, a manufacturer depends on its distributors to protect its reputation and its brands. And and what will happen is the manufacturer will have no ability to stop selling to a distributor if the distributor is of poor quality or, you know, interferes or degrades the manufacturer's brand. The second reason I'd like to eliminate this provision in the bill is that manufacturers play a key role in vetting distributors. Because their brand is at risk, when a low-quality or ineffective distributor attempts to get the manufacturer's product, the manufacturer just refuses to do it. With this bill, this provision eliminates that ability. The third reason I'd like to eliminate this provision from the bill is that it actually acts as a magnet for people who have questionable reputations. They're guaranteed to get product to sell into the industry. They're guaranteed to become a distributor. And I think that's contrary to a good and well-functioning market. The second provision I would like to have you modify or remove from the bill is in Section 25J. This provision has the effect of appropriating a distributor's private property, and I'd like to explain it. The provision says that manufacturers must sell all products to all distributors. What the bill doesn't comprehend or take care of is that distributors, who I am, what we do is we create product and put it into the marketplace. So the manufacturers will create general product for the country. We'll take that product, and we have specific instructions to make it more Alaskan. We will add play features to it, different payouts to it. We'll also completely invent our own games. For example, I worked with the Iditarod many years ago, and we created an Iditarod game. When I create a game, I either do it ourselves or we hire artists to help us. And what happens is we create artwork that's covered by copyright laws. We also sell product that I have personal trademarks to, so the product is sold with my trademark. The way this bill would operate is the manufacturers would have to print my product with my copyrights and trademarks and sell them to my competitors. And I think that's wrong. I think that's an appropriation of my property without due consideration or approval. I don't think that the manufacturer should be able to sell my intellectual property to other distributors. So I think that needs to be fixed. The third thing, this bill is in 25L, and it does price fixing. And again, I'm not quite sure what was attempted to be addressed, what problem was attempted to be addressed. But as the bill reads now, that all manufacturers must sell to all distributors at the same price. So the way our industry works is if I go to a manufacturer and I'm a larger manufacturer, I have the ability as a distributor to negotiate with that manufacturer on the number of tickets that need to be printed. I have the ability to negotiate the price they're printed at. I have the ability to negotiate delivery dates. And that's, you know, a larger distributor clearly has more negotiating power than a smaller distributor. The way this bill reads is that the manufacturer must set price and terms and sell to all distributors at the same price and terms. That eliminates my ability to go and negotiate with the manufacturer for better price and terms, and that in turn will actually cause prices to go up and not prices to go down. It's common practice for distributors to negotiate with manufacturers. And so, again, this bill eliminates that ability and fixes price. I think that will lead to, you know, an ineffective marketplace. The final provision I'd like to talk about is 25N. The provision 25N requires manufacturers to deliver within 7 days to manufacturers all contracts, agreements that a distributor has signed with the manufacturer to the department of the gaming unit, the gaming group. It's assumed those documents would be open to the public, or at least would be at risk of being, requested as a Freedom of Information Act. Those are business confidential agreements, and if my competition has the ability to see those agreements, they're seeing my really great business secrets. They would know what I'm ordering, what quantities I'm ordering, how much I'm ordering, when I'm ordering it, what products I'm ordering, and those are the things that would be unfair for a competitor to know about my business. Those are my comments.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone else that wants to testify that's in the audience today? That concludes the public hearing section of this meeting, and we'll close the public hearing. Senator Keel, a review of the fiscal note.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have one fiscal note for Senate Bill 170. It is from the Department of Revenue's Tax Division. It shows increased appropriation in the coming fiscal year of 288.8, so 288,800 of unrestricted general fund, which shifts in FY28 and beyond to program receipts, designated general fund. The department gives an indeterminate note for the change in revenue and notes that it will need to write or change regulations.
Thank you, Senator Keel. We'll bring back the prime sponsor, Senator Bjorkman. Before I ask for your closing comments and any responses you may have, how do you envision this piece of legislation affecting rural areas of the state? We did not hear from anyone from rural areas of the state. And will this affect any internet activity for gaming in Alaska?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Rural communities in the state would still have the same protections and provisions currently included in Title V, giving significant provision for local control, as well as the ability with the tablet model that we've adopted here to keep costs down for the manufacturer's cost and leaving more monies available for charitable organizations in rural Alaska, because you would not incur large costs from moving other things. So local control still is an important part of what happens inside of Title V. And the charities and nonprofits that operate in rural Alaska would experience similar benefits to charities that you heard from today during testimony. These types of games do not require that I'm aware of, but we can certainly look into it, a lot of internet bandwidth in order to operate. games that would be played require them to be downloaded, which, as you're aware, in rural Alaska can take some time. But to my knowledge, they do not require an ongoing significant pipe of data in order to operate. But certainly happy to get back to the committee in regards to that second part of your question.
Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, are you looking for questions for the sponsor now, or would you like to hold those for a future hearing on the bill?
If individuals can give in writing to the sponsor and we could get a written response for consideration of the committee, if that would be preferable to the prime sponsor.
I can do things either way, Mr. Chairman. I'm happy to oblige either.
Any additional closing comments you might have on the bill before we set this bill aside?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, and members of the Finance Committee for hearing this bill today. This bill before you today is a result of significant work done by stakeholders as well as stakeholders that operate businesses in charitable gaming as well as many nonprofits that benefit from charitable gaming. The very point of this bill is to benefit the charities and nonprofits like you heard from today, youth sports, the Alaska Baseball League, senior centers, and veteran service organizations. I understand that some people who have businesses, for-profit businesses, might not like portions of the bill. That's okay. This bill is not for them. People that you heard from today suggested that if provisions in this bill go forward, as you see here, that bingo halls should be allowed to serve beer. I don't agree with that position. I think that our liquor laws are fine the way that they are, and that limits for tablets, as you see before you in the bill, to 10 or 6 or 1 for every 6 people of capacity are an effective limit. We could talk about them and talk about differences of them, but they're the same for everyone. And as we look at this bill and what it is capable of doing, I think it's important to look at market forces and think about why those market forces might be beneficial or might not be when we talk about limits. First, let's talk about the limit of manufacturers' percentage of the ideal net. Ideal net, as a definition, really encompasses the amount of payout that a game would pay out if all the tickets were sold and all the prizes were awarded. This bill establishes a cap, a max on that limit. The market negotiations can happen under that to drive that price down. Contracts have been negotiated and numbers have been assigned previously in this space, in this state, in preparation for this bill and some others, possibly. One contract is just over 30%. So if it's a max at 35, no one is saying that someone has to agree to 35%. You can go with a different manufacturer and negotiate down from there. 35% is a cap. It is not a guaranteed amount. And the same with the ideal payout. I understand that some people, again, who have for-profit businesses might not like this. However, this bill is for charities and nonprofits so that they can maximize their returns. The ideal payout at 90% is a cap. Can people offer games that pay out less money? They can, but they might not be as popular to play if people are aware that they can go and play a game that pays out at 90% when some businesses choose to offer a game at a lower percentage so that their for-profit business can make more money. I've spent a significant amount of time working with all these stakeholders to go through these issues. I understand that we can still make some tweaks to this bill to make it even better, and I'm happy to work with the committee on those. But what I won't do is I don't want to change this bill in a way that would preference anyone else other than charities and nonprofits. That's the way I've designed this bill, and I'll defend the provisions in the bill when I know that they are in the bill to protect charities and nonprofits and provide the most money available to them. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bjorgman. That concludes the work on this bill today, and that concludes our agenda. Our next meeting is scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, at 9 a.m. We'll be hearing from Callan about the performance of the Alaska Permanent Fund. With that, we are adjourned.